In this episode of Startups for the Rest of Us, Mike and I discuss outbound sales for startups with special guest Steli Efti. This is Startups for the Rest of Us, episode 202. Welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us, a podcast that helps developers, designers, and entrepreneurs be awesome at launching software products, whether you've built your first product or you're just thinking about it. I'm Rob.
And I'm Mike.
And we're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made. It's a word this week, Mike.
Well, I totally forgot that I'm going to the Business of Software conference next week.
And are you going downtown and staying in a hotel, or are you going to drive in from your house?
I'm just going to stay at a hotel nearby, so nice. It makes it easier.
Any speakers in particular you're looking forward to seeing?
I haven't even looked.
I'm feeling a little bit the same way. In 2 weeks, I fly to Thailand with my family. So my two sons and my wife and I jump on an airplane. We're going to Thailand for 4 weeks, and that's culminating with Dan and Ian's DC meetup in Bangkok, where I'm doing a talk. And then my family flies home, and I go to Prague and meet you so we can pull off MicroConf Europe at the end of October.
Very cool. Hopefully the political unrest won't get to you.
Indeed.
Well, the other thing I've got going on is I've started doing some webinars. I signed up for a GoToMeeting account and sent out some emails today, some tweets, at least do some testing around that area and see if using some webinars is going to help push AudioShark out there and kind of fill the sales funnel a little bit. And that's kind of what I'm working on right now for the most part, is just making sure that I'm stuffing as many leads into that sales funnel as I possibly can and making sure that I'm following up with everybody.
Very cool. Yeah, I've heard a lot of good things about webinars. It's been on my list forever to do, and I just have not had the bandwidth to do it. But from what I've heard, the results that you get from them are exceptional. And this is from people I know who are in the same space as we are. There's just a lot of value there. And just based on my experience, even recording screencasts without even the interactivity of a webinar, those have really made a difference in my sales efforts for Drip. So definitely interested to hear how it goes for you.
Yeah, I'll definitely keep you posted. My first one isn't until next week, I think. So it'll be after the Business of Software conference. That's how I even realized that the Business of Software conference was next week, because I went to go schedule that and said, oh, shoot, I can't do it Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday.
Nice. We're rounding out our MicroConf Europe speaker list. We've landed Brennan Dunn, Ryan Delk from Gumroad. He's been on the docket for a while, but I'm really excited about his talk. He has so much data from all the launches that Gumroad has seen, and he's bringing that into his talk. And then we just landed Jane Portman from UI Breakfast. And Jane is a UX designer and developer from Russia, and she came to MicroConf Vegas. And she's done some pretty amazing UI work. She worked with Joanna Wiebe on their new Disco product. And I don't know if you've seen that UI, but it's really impressive. So excited to hear from Jane. She's going to be talking about design for founders, how to kind of minimize the effort of getting a good design out and not breaking the bank while you're doing it. So I'm excited about that. You know, we still do have a few tickets left for MicroConf Europe, which is in a little over a month in Prague. And if you go to microconfeurope.com, you can find out more details. So today, Mike and I have the pleasure of having Steli Efti with us. Steli is the co-founder of Close.io, which started as a sales-as-a-service company called Elastic Sales and pivoted into the SaaS company that many of us have heard about today called Close.io. So Steli, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Rob and Mike, it's a pleasure and honor.
Awesome. So both Mike and I have read your book, Ultimate Startup Guide to Outbound Sales, How to Turn Cold Leads into Hot Customers. And we will include a link to that in our show notes, and folks can use promo code AwesomeSauce for half off of that book. So you've done a lot. I was telling you before we started recording that I hadn't heard of you before maybe a month or two ago when someone tweeted us and said, hey, you should have Steli on the podcast. And so I put you in our list. You know, we have a big list of people who want to come on the show. But right away, after I heard your name, suddenly you're everywhere. And I see a bunch of talks. You've written this book. You've done Close.io, which I started hearing about Close.io from people like Brennan Dunn. You're kind of building yourself a really good name here, a good personal brand in this outbound sales world. And I guess I want to kick it off by saying, why outbound instead of inbound? It feels like a lot of the world, you know, in our kind of web SaaS world, a lot of people are doing inbound, myself included. But you are a proponent of outbound, and you're obviously making it work. So talk to us a little bit about that.
So that's an excellent question, because I'm not really a pro inbound or pro outbound kind of guy. And outbound is not the, like, I'm not religious or rigid about this. I'm a whatever works kind of guy. And we're actually writing on a second volume of the startup sales book, and it's going to be about inbound sales. Because with Elastic Sales, primarily what we were doing for startups, we did work for over 200 venture-backed startups, most of them, if not almost all of them, were SaaS businesses. And the majority of our work there was outbound sales. So we just built a lot of knowledge, a lot of expertise, a lot of do's and don'ts, and wanted to share that with the world. But with Closeout today, we actually do zero outbound sales. It's all inbound. Our growth today, and not to say that we will never do outbound, we will, but up to this point, we've been growing quite dramatically just purely through inbound sales. So I like both. Every time I give an audience of founders the choice, what should I talk about? I'm surprised that people always vote up outbound sales as something. And I think it's because we all struggle with it. A lot of like technical founders and engineers have kind of the whole like cold calling, cold emailing has a lot of stigma to it. So I think it's just a topic people struggle a lot more with than the inbound one. And that's why we kind of started focusing on teaching that first.
You probably have an idea of our audience. You said you've listened to the podcast. And so it's a lot of single founders, you know, web, mobile, WordPress plugins, a lot of software guys. There are some info product guys, certainly, but specialty is software in terms of the audience. And I, you know, by nature, as a software developer myself, outbound, it is a little intimidating. How have you approached that? How have you helped bridge that gap for folks who say, boy, I don't know that I'm cut out for it. Like, I don't know that I have the personality, or I don't know that I can pull this off.
First of all, I think it's about like, demything the whole topic and like just killing a few bad ideas or misconceptions that have been around for way too long. I do think that the first thing we have to like kill is the idea of what a salesperson is and what makes good salespeople and bad salespeople. And I'm not a sales guy. This is not my thing. I can't do sales. Like, I think most people think sales is all about talking. Are you the type of person that loves to hear yourself talk? Are you like super like outgoing? Are you a super charismatic personality that loves the limelight and loves to be like charming and talk people into doing things they don't want to do? And honestly, that sounds like a douchebag to me, and I don't want to be that person. I don't think most people, most founders, most like product people ultimately want to be like that. And you don't have to. Like, sales is really not about talking. Sales is a lot more about asking questions and proactively listening and actually truly understanding who is this customer, what are their needs, can I, with the solution I'm building, actually solve their problems in an effective manner. And once you truly understand somebody, you ask the right question, you listen really carefully, then selling is easy. All you have to do is, now that they convinced you that your solution is the right one, you have to tell them why they convinced you of that. And typically, it's easy to then get them on board and actually close the deal. We've built our sales software by having engineers sitting next to salespeople and actually watching over their shoulder what they're doing and saying, well, this is stupid. Why do you have to do this all day long? But also just listening in on conversations and things that are going on. And I've discovered that engineers are pretty good at asking questions. They're pretty good at actually not staying at the surface level of information, but going really deep, not just taking the first answer at its surface, but saying, well, but why do you want that? What actually are you trying to accomplish with this? And actually really asking questions until they arrive at a good understanding. And once you recognize that, it's more about like asking the good and the right questions and truly understanding somebody and then telling them that you can help them, then sales is not this big, mythical, difficult thing. It's just asking questions, trying to understand your customers, and then servicing them in a really good way. Now, having said that, there are things that are really hard about sales, especially if you want to do outbound as a single founder. And the hard things are actually more about, like, it's more psychologically hard than it's, you don't have to do anything that's truly physically hard. It's all just mental. It's all just emotional. And the hard things are the showing up piece. Like, when you do cold sales, what that means is you are proactively reaching out to people that didn't ask about it, didn't ask about your solution. And you tell them, hey, I have something that might be of value to you, and I need a few minutes of your time and a little bit of your attention so both of us can explore if this would work or not. And that's uncomfortable to people because there's a high chance of rejection. A lot of times people are going to tell you no, or they're not going to even respond to you if you send them an email. And people take that really personal, and I think that there are ways for all of us to kind of learn to deal with rejection, embrace it, and understand it's part of trying to build something of value. And the second thing is going for the close. And for the exact same reason, people a lot of times have good conversations. They understand the potential customer prospect really well. They do believe that their solution would be really great. And then they talk about it a little bit, but they're just afraid to pull the trigger and ask, hey, would you buy this? Hey, do you want to be one of my first customers? Hey, can I have your credit card number? Like, they're just afraid of like pulling the trigger. Again, for the same reason, we don't like to be rejected. We don't like to hear no. We're afraid of it and we try to avoid it. And when you do sales, you can't avoid it. You have to embrace that. And I think that's the emotional piece is really hard. I think that's one of the reasons why a lot of us don't do as much as we could. And then there's this like idea myth. Yeah, sales is this thing that I'm not. And it's this like you have to be a certain personality type to be great at sales. I truly don't believe that. Petty 11 is a really good example. Somebody that many people might know of, somebody that's not a salesperson. He doesn't look or walk or talk like one, but he's pretty dangerous. He gets the basics of sales and he can do that really effectively in his business. And it's propelled his consulting and all his other businesses forward. So I think everybody can learn the basics of sale. And then we all have to really learn to manage the rejection that comes with that.
One of the things that you talked about kind of very early on there was the idea that it can be scary for people to go out there and start making those outbound calls. I listened to the podcast where you were on with Patrick McKenzie talking about outbound sales a little bit. And I think one of the techniques that you talked about is something that I definitely want to highlight to some of our listeners. One of the things that you had said was don't focus on all of the rejections, because obviously when you start focusing on the negatives, it can drag you down. It really wears on your mental abilities to kind of continue. And what you had said was that although maybe you're only getting one sale out of 100, your metrics should not really be tied to that one sale. It should be tied to those 100 calls. Could you talk a little bit more about that?
You know, there's kind of many different little hacks. This is one of them, to kind of try to reprogram myself on how I felt about the outcomes that I produced, right? So early on, when I started doing sales with my first business, I realized, hey, I've arrived at a point where I'm able to create pretty predictable outcomes. When I call 100 people, I get to talk to, you know, 20. And out of those 20, I get to get 5 new customers and 15 of them. And another 5 tell me not now, but it was a good conversation. And 10 of them tell me no in one way or another, right? So once I realized that out of 100, I'll close 5 deals, I made the math. How much money does that mean? Is that really productive? And back then I realized, yeah, this is actually really productive, really profitable for me. But what I realized also was that if I focus on those 5 closes, sales is not really there's highs and lows. Not every single day you're going to create the exact same outcome. On average, you are, but not every single day, right? So what happened was when I had good days, maybe I had the first 5 calls I made 5 sales. That felt amazing, right? I was like, this is amazing. This is awesome. Well, I already accomplished my goal. And what would I do? I stopped making calls because I was like, I accomplished my goal today. But if I had continued, I might have made another 5 sales during the day. And then the next day, a bad day, and I would make my 100 calls and have 0 sales. I'd be devastated and destroyed emotionally. And maybe even the next day would kind of move my mood to not wanting to make any calls and kind of mess with my head. So I realized that when I focus on success, number one, it kind of influences my how consistent I am in putting in the work. And I realized that every time I got failure, which was or I got rejection, which was a lot more than I got success, it would make me feel really bad, like a failure, like I'm not accomplishing anything, I'm not worthy, my business is failing. So I try to come up with a way to make myself feel good by creating failure. And one hack of doing that was to actually make the goal every day to get rejected 15 times. So I would show up in my office, and my goal was not to close 5 deals. My goal was get 15 people to tell me no, that I can't convince otherwise. Because I knew if I can actually generate that, on average, I'll get my 5 closes, but I'm actually going to feel like I'm accomplishing things when I hear no. And I'm going to be able to check that off my list. I had like a little list I put on there, like 15 no's, and I would know once I checked off all these 15 no's, I got my job done for the day. And it kind of made me feel good when I got rejected and reprogrammed the way that I emotionally was able to handle it. And it made me more productive at the end of the day. So yeah, so that's kind of one way to kind of hack your own brain and make yourself feel like you're accomplishing something when you're actually getting rejected versus feeling like you are failing at what you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, I thought it was very insightful to see that you're tying your success to the wrong metric in that case, because you want to be able to say, check off the 99 boxes or 100 boxes a day, say I made 100 calls versus I made 5 sales. And, you know, the sales right. will come as a result of making those 100 calls, and you shouldn't be tying your success metrics to the sales themselves. Back it off a little bit.
Absolutely.
It seems like a cold email as an outbound sales tool is becoming more and more popular. I've been hearing about it from folks. Predictable Revenue, the book from, it was the Salesforce.com guys, talked a lot about cold email. There's also cold calling, and you know, we know that there are two different levels of effort and probably two different markets where that works. But someone listening to this podcast right now is probably thinking, should I cold email? At what point is it worth it? You know, if I'm selling a $20 ebook, obviously it's not worth cold emailing. If I'm selling a $20 a month SaaS app, I don't know if it is. If it's $200 a month, then it probably is. In your experience, what is the metric? You know, is it a customer lifetime value? Where is it that cold email is worth exploring for you or your company?
There's two distinct stages of a business, and depending on which stage you're in, the answer is different, right? So in the very early days, when you're kind of pre-product market fit, when you're still trying to figure out your idea, when you're still trying to figure out how to market your idea successfully or not, I actually believe that at that phase, you want to go through all the available channels to actually interact with potential customers and learn from them. So I would, even at the very early days, I would actually drive to customers and actually show up at people's offices or businesses or wherever and try to interact with people in person, because that's not really scalable. And even if you have a $20 ebook, you know this is not the way that we want to grow this business forever. But in the early days, it's more about learnings. And if you can actually look somebody in the eye and get the context of their business and see how, not just what they're telling you on a survey or something, but how they react, their body language, their tonality, other people they work with, their challenges at work, their environment, that can teach you so much that can go back into the way that you write that ebook or that you develop on that software. So the early days, I would try to be as close to the customer as possible and actually go and meet some and show up at some businesses to get feedback. And one level that scales a little further but gives you a little less context is cold calling, right? So after you visited a bunch of businesses and learned a bunch of things, you might want to see, I want to talk to a few more people, a few more businesses, and scale it up a little bit, and then you start calling people. And there again, you have not just the content but also a little bit more context through tonality and what they're saying and how they're saying things. And then one level further that scales a little bit better but again is missing some more information is actually emailing a lot of people, right? So I would go visit a bunch of people, cold call a bunch of people, and then email and ramp up the volume. And it's different things you're going to learn through these different channels, different feedback you can get from individuals. With email, you have more metrics, open rates, click-through rates. You can experiment more with the wording and copy. With on the call, you can interact, ask more follow-up questions, keep people engaged. And when you actually visit them, you learn a lot more about who they are and their challenges and their, you know, natural habitat, if you want. So at the early days, I wouldn't worry about like what does scale or not, or what are channels that I'm going to be using forever for my business. I would focus more on how can I learn as much as humanly possible about my customer. And I do think that cold email plays a role there. You can cold email a lot of people. You can ping a lot of people on LinkedIn or just cold email them or even tweet them or whatever it is. Reach out to people as much as possible electronically and see what they tell you. You can use that to either schedule calls or in-person meetings or just to ask them to fill out a survey or just reply and tell you what they think about something. So that's that. That's more of the exploration phase. When it comes to I have a business that works, a product that's launched, a customer base I understand, and now it's about how can I scale? When does cold email there play a role? I think that cold email in a more established business that has some product market fit usually works best for companies that are selling either to large organizations, if you're selling SaaS to like the enterprise, and your goal is not necessarily through the cold email to sell or convince somebody to buy, but to actually get connected with the right individual within the organization and then schedule a call or a demo or something like that. There, it's almost an inevitable tool to success. Everything that's below the enterprise, everything that is maybe not an enterprise client, but still a customer lifetime value that's in the thousands, not in the hundreds, it may or may not make sense, but it gets harder and harder. So cold email to scale a business, usually a really good tool when you do large customers with high customer lifetime value. If you're kind of in the middle market, it may or may not work. You want to play around with it. And if you're in the very small market, like, you know, my customers bring in $20, $25, you know, even $100 customer lifetime value, it's going to be probably not a sustainable channel to keep cold emailing people. But then again, you might not want to cold email people to buy your ebook. you might gonna cold email people to get on their podcast or get some press or do a joint venture promotion deal or something else. You might still use that channel for partnerships that are more multiplication factors, but you probably will not want to send individual cold emails to people that may or may not buy your $20 ebook. That probably will not make sense and not scale really.
That makes sense. And in terms of cold calling, is it, would you say it's similar kind of metrics you'd use, or is it less scalable?
I would say cold calling actually works better sometimes in the SMB market than in the enterprise market, funny enough, because it's just so hard to cold call into like Coca-Cola and then route your way into the VP of marketing department. That's just never going to work. But you can easily cold call a restaurant and get the manager or the owner on the phone or something like that. So in the SMB market, I've seen a lot of companies succeed to various degrees with cold calls. But I still think if you're doing cold calling, yes, you don't have to have hundreds of thousands or millions worth of customer lifetime value, but it should be 2,000, 3,000, 4,000. At a minimum, it should be a few thousand dollars in customer lifetime value. It's going to be really hard if it's just a few hundred to ever make the economics work. It's going to be brutally hard. So yeah, that's the way I would think about it when it comes to like, when will cold calling be a sustainable channel for you to grow?
What I found in doing some cold calling is that even if a business is several hundred employees, depending on the type of business, you can still get pretty far up in the chain to like the VP of sales or VP of engineering and people like that very, very quickly, because they're the ones who inbound phone calls are directed to. So if you email somebody and say, hey, you know, how do I get in touch with so-and-so? You're going to be able to do that pretty easily because they're willing to just say, hey, you're supposed to go talk to my boss, because they don't want to talk to you, whoever that tech is. So they're more than happy to turn you over to their boss.
It really heavily depends on the industry. Sometimes you can actually just call somebody and they'll pick up the phone. Sometimes it's the type of business where the decision maker is either used to picking up the phone, or it's so rare that somebody calls that they pick up the phone. All kinds of different combinations can work. Some people have figured out a way in their industry and vertical that they're selling into. They truly understand the gatekeepers. They've gotten to a point where they really understand when the secretary picks up, how do I sell her on why this is valuable to her boss or his boss, whatever it is. And they really make that work. And many times in very like more Fortune 500 setups, the larger the organization, the harder it is a lot of times for people to know even who would be the right person for this. And you end up at kind of calling trees and voicemails and that people don't listen to. So it really depends on the vertical. I would always test, you know, a few hundred calls or just even 50 calls today to see if I can validate what I just heard in a podcast or read in a book or heard from some other person. I would always just go out and try it myself and see if the market that you're selling to, if it truly that vertical of that market mirrors what you've learned or heard from somebody else. So yeah, I'm telling people a lot of times, large organizations, you may not want to do cold calling, but then there are exceptions to that rule. So we always test it out.
So one of the things that you talk about is essentially having an objection management document. Can you talk a little bit about this and what its purpose is? Because I really think that this will be helpful for some of the listeners.
Oh yeah, I love that because it's such a simple thing to do, but it can have really profound impact on how you interact with people. So with most businesses, with all businesses, the objections that you will face, the things people will tell you as reasons why they're not yet sure if they want to buy your solution or your product or why they're against it, it's not going to be a list of tens of thousands of very individual objections. It's going to be a list of like 10 to 20 objections you hear every single day. There's going to be a top 10 list of like the main things you hear again and again and again. And a simple thing that you can do that anybody can do is just sit down, take 20 minutes and write down what are the core objections I hear again and again. It's too expensive. We don't have the time. We already have a solution like this. It doesn't do HTML email, or it doesn't have this feature functionality we want. Whatever it is for your business, you know best. Just write down what are the top 10 questions or 10 objections that I hear a lot. And then once you've written down these 10 objections, what you do is you take another 10 or 15 minutes and you write down an answer to each and every one of them. And that answer doesn't have to be perfect. You don't have to stress yourself out by like thinking, oh, I need to write the perfect answer. No, just write an answer. The only restriction or goal that you should have with that answer is that it should be short, two sentences, two, three sentences max. Answer to each or reaction to each objection that you have. You write them down and do it quick. Don't overthink things. Just write them down. And once you have that, you basically have something, a document that you can use and improve and re-edit and have different versions with that's going to help you increase your effectiveness when you deal with customers, when you're trying to close deals, when you're interacting, even with investors or the press or whoever. This objection management doc can work in any kind of setting where you have to interact with other people and influence them. Is you have something that you can use to have clarity and be able to respond and react in a really professional and effective way with people. And you can do all kinds of things to it. So once you have the first version, why don't you send it to five of your friends or five of your best people you admire or people that are really good at what they do and ask for feedback? Why don't you send it to your five best customers and say, hey, here's the objections I deal with every day. Here's the way that I would respond to them today. Do you think those are good answers? What do you think? And you try to improve it over time. But the core thing is to have simple, concise answers to the main objections. Because here's the thing. Too many times, we as founders, we know everything about our business. We don't think we need to write down anything or like create a script or anything like that. So what happens is every single day when we interact with customers or potential customers, we compute answers to their objections in real time. And that's just stupid. The problem with that is that the quality of your answers and responses will heavily depend on your daily performance, mood, your state of mind. Are you having a good day or bad day? On bad days, your answers will suck. On good days, your answers might be brilliant, but you're not going to be consistent. And the other thing is that usually when we compute answers in real time, we tend to speak for way too long because we're not editing, right? We're kind of thinking on the fly. And when you think on the fly and talk on the fly, you usually talk for way too long. So all that does is it wastes time, it's inconsistent performance, and usually when people take way too long to answer an objection that a customer has, it doesn't leave the customer with a high level of like confidence that this is something that's simple and easy and they feel confident about it. The cool thing, if you have a two-sentence answer to almost any objection you face, is you can actually answer in a very concise way with a high level of clarity if you're in an in-person meeting, even by keeping eye contact. And it's not just what you say. The way that you respond to that objection will make the other person feel like, oh my God, this guy seems or this gal seems pretty confident and comfortable in responding to my big objection. Maybe I should also get comfortable with the idea of buying this. Like, it's just people like confident people. People like people that have clarity. It kind of suggests that you're smart, that you're an expert. People want to buy from businesses like that. So just by having the top 10 objections written down, write down two-sentence answers to them, even if they're not the best answers in the world, just by having that level of like clarity that you're able to answer these objections with a certain level of certitude will actually make a big difference.
You know, one of the questions that we get asked on the show fairly regularly is, should I outsource sales? In your opinion, do you think a startup can outsource sales? Whether it's, I mean, I know there's kind of different stages, right? There's different stages of the startup before they have product market fit and after. And in addition, there's just this cold prospecting that is then used to set appointments. And then there's the actual sales effort there. So what have you seen work and not work with those scenarios in terms of startups trying to outsource them?
It's a question I get asked a lot because I was running a very large, probably the biggest SaaS outsourcing sales business that existed up to this point. So my answer is yes, but only if it's about replicating results you have already in a predictable way delivered yourself. So what I mean by that is, like, a lot of people want to outsource sales because they don't know how to do it or because they're not seeing success with it. And that's kind of like saying, I want to outsource engineering for my product. Can I outsource, find some developer company in the world or a bunch of freelancers to build me something? Of course you can. But what you can and what's not a good idea is to say, well, I'm going to find this developer and I'm going to tell him or her, hey, I want to do this app. It should be a SaaS app and it's in the analytics space, but I don't really know what it looks like. I don't have any specs. I don't have any ideas that seem to be good. So why don't you just write me a SaaS app in the analytics space that's awesome? How good of an idea does that sound? Like to the developer audience out there, right? No developer would think that that's a good idea. That will never work, right? So what you have to do when you want to outsource the development of your product is you have to have a very high level of clarity what that should be. You have to have specs. You have to have user stories. You really need to know exactly what you want. And when you can tell them exactly what you want step by step, then an outsource team might do a really good job for you. The same thing with sales. If you want to outsource your entire sales process or even just parts of it, It can work, but it only will work, and it only makes sense for you as a business to do that once you've actually mastered that part of the sale. Once you can, in a repeatable and predictable fashion, generate high-quality leads, let's say, and prospects, then you can go to an outsourcing firm and say, hey, here's what we're doing, here's how we're doing it. Can you replicate those results at a lower cost or at a higher scale? You have now the knowledge, you have control of your business, right? If at any point it doesn't work out with that outsourcing firm, you can bring it back internally. You know how to do it. You don't outsource the actual core knowledge of how to run your business. And you can tell that company exactly what to do, and you know how to actually judge their performance. What's never going to work, and what has never worked in my experience with my own business and our clients, as well as all the other outsourced sales businesses I see, is when you say, hey, we struggle with sales, or we struggle with this particular part of sales. Can you fix our problem? Can you find a solution to that? That's usually not what outsourcing sales firms are good at. They will tell you they can, but more often than not, they can't, and it's not a good idea. So once you figure things out, you can outsource, but not before.
Very good. Well, thanks so much for coming on the show today, Stelly. We really appreciate it. You know, we have another half a dozen questions at least, along with bullet points about how to cold email. You have your Pitchology 101 framework. There's a lot of stuff that we didn't get to that is in your book, Ultimate Startup Guide to Outbound Sales. And as I said, if people want to check it out, we will link it up in the show notes, and they can use code AwesomeSauce for 50% off.
Awesome. Hey, guys, it was a pleasure. And one more thing to people that are listening. As I said, I'm a huge fan of the show, so I super empathize with the audience. If anyone reads the book or reads any of the blog posts, anything else that I write about, and wants to connect, say hi, ask a follow-up question, whatever it is, just send me an email. It's Stelly, S-T-E-L-I, at close.io. I'm more than happy to help anyone I can with anything I've learned. So feel free to reach out and say hi.
Perfect.
Thank you so much.
Well, I think that wraps us up. If you have a question for us, you can call it into our voicemail number at 1-888-801-9690, or you can email it to us at questions@startupsforrestofus.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from We're Out of Control by Moot, used under Creative Commons. You can subscribe to us on iTunes by searching for Startups, or by RSS at startupsforrestofus.com, where you'll also find a full transcript of each episode. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.